Enjoying all.
There you go. Okay, she might find Jesus out there walking with his disciples through the fields of corn.
She knows him already. Yep.
That's good. Here we go.
This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. And now with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Crismeyer.
Well, you probably heard some of the banter between me and my guest today concerning walking through the fields of corn in Kansas. Well, that was preliminary conversation between me and him, and somehow it went over the air live, and so you're privy to those conversations. You realize that we do have live conversations with our guests. We're personally interested in their lives, what's going on with their children, what's going on with their families. Today on Viewpoint, however, we're going to be talking about something that, well, it may be that you and your family have encountered this particular issue. It's called physician-assisted suicide. Physician-assisted suicide. And according to Forbes magazine, the big business magazine, it's a problem that's bigger than we realize. Before we get into that, just so that you know, some people call it medical aid in dying. That's a euphemism for suicide, physician-assisted suicide. And believe it or not, there are already 11 states that authorize doctor-assisted suicide. California, Colorado, Delaware, Hawaii, Maine, Montana, New Jersey, New Mexico, Oregon, Vermont, Washington, D.C., and the state of Washington. So where is it going? Is it spreading? Is it metastasizing across the country? And if so, what is motivating physicians to line up or be urged to participate in helping their patients die? I thought that was contrary to the Hippocratic Oath, which is becoming the hypocritical oath. You know, do no harm. Isn't that what the Hippocratic Oath was about for doctors? We're healers. We do no harm. And yet today, as our thinking is metastasizing ever more toward a death culture, we're finding that even doctors are willing to participate in ending their patients' lives. And the political pressures are amazing to accomplish this. Money, the lust for money in our governments is driving the issue, and much of that was driven by, well, somewhere between 63 and 70 million of our children who have been lost to abortion since 1973. You say, well, what does that have to do with it? Well, here's the problem. You see, those 73 or 70 million kids, or however many it is, that were aborted, were supposed to have been on the Social Security rolls. They were supposed to fit into the planned dynamics, economic dynamics, of every state and the entire United States of America. But they're not there anymore. And so the pressure on governments to make up the difference is increasing. So much so that they're looking for every conceivable avenue to raise money, including facilitating the dying of patients, of people, their citizens, in order to protect against having to spend money for situations, medical care, where it was supposed to have been cared for, ultimately by those 60-some million kids who were aborted. Now, that having been said, we're going to talk about this with our special guest, Dr. Don Stern. And he's a veteran doctor, but he's very, very concerned about this issue in Virginia. That's where he lives. That's where we broadcast from. And he says there is a move afoot in Virginia to make Virginia now another state authorizing doctor-assisted suicide. So Donald Stern is joining us here. John, it's good to have you on the program. Longtime friend of our program here. We value what you do. What has gotten the burr in your saddle here with regard to this particular issue? There's so many issues out there. Why this one?
Yes. Well, good afternoon, Chuck. And a pleasure to be with you and your radio audience. What got to me in these regards is I just don't think physicians have any business killing their patients. As you brought up earlier, there's an ethic that's been the standard in the physician community for thousands of years, and that has to do with doing no harm. A lot of people refer to it as the Hippocratic Oath, though that oath is frequently not used in our medical schools anymore, but there is still a standard ethic in these regards, and that's being neglected more and more so. Though physicians who are the proponents would say, they're not doing harm, they're doing good because they're relieving pain and suffering.
Uh-huh. Well, who doesn't want to relieve pain and suffering?
What? Really? Right. I mean, I'm pretty familiar with this. My wife was diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer 5 years ago.
Uh-huh.
She's doing okay now after she's on her third course of chemotherapy. She's had surgery multiple times. She's had radiation treatment, but seems to be doing as well as anybody this far down the road.
Well, stage 4 colon cancer could be an exterminator for life itself, and obviously neither you nor her were willing to go down that road to allow that to happen. You've done everything you could to fight it off, and yet there was been pain. There's been suffering. So why not just wrap it all up, finish the job, and be on with it?
Well, as a physician and family member, I would not participate in a process that intentionally takes a life. If the medical process and interventions that we're using are necessary to reduce her pain and suffering, that come along with this natural physical process, and if that inevitably leads to death, like with palliative sedation, then so be it. You know, doctors have a means for providing medical aid and dying now without killing their patients. It's called palliative care and hospice. These are the best alternatives now. And Chuck, one of the other lies about this whole thing is relieving pain and suffering. Well, the proponents will suggest that these patients are choosing assisted suicide largely because of physical pain.
All right. So I have a choice. The word choice seems to constantly come up. Your right to choose and so on. So suicide then becomes a person's right to choose, so to speak, and many people commit suicide. We're hearing of more and more suicides that are happening in the military and other people, young people and so on. So the question then would be, well, what's the big deal? People commit suicide anyway.
Well, you used the term right to choose.
Mm-hmm.
I will tell you the Supreme Court in 1997 ruled that there's no provision in the U.S. Constitution that gives people the right to commit suicide.
Interesting. All right, we'll have to leave it at that for the moment. We're heading into a break here. Don, stay tuned, friends. Physician-assisted suicide, a bigger problem than we realize. That's the heading of an article with the business magazine Forbes. What do they have to say about it? We'll be right back.
Once upon a time, children could pray and read their Bibles in school. Divorces were practically unknown, as was child abuse. In our once great America, virginity and chastity were popular virtues and homosexuality was an abomination. So what happened in just one generation? Hi, I'm Chuck Chrismeyer, and I urge you to join me daily on Viewpoint, where we discuss the most challenging issues touching our hearts and homes. Could America's moral slide relate to the Fourth Commandment?
Listen to Viewpoint on this radio station or anytime at saveus.org.
All Archbishop John Sherrington of Liverpool over there in London, our mother country, who oversees life issues for the bishops of England and Wales, has called the recent passage of a bill over there in the UK to legalize assisted suicide a turning point in the country's devaluation of the dignity of life. He said, I think we've crossed a watershed, that fundamental line in the sand that is that a life is always to be protected and that one cannot assist another person's suicide. He said there's an erosion of the value of the dignity of life. The bill now is going to go to the House of Lords, where the non-elected upper chamber there can choose to pass the legislation or amend it. The Archbishop also said the end-of-life bill is a threat to healthcare workers' freedom of conscience if it becomes law without the proper protections. He said, we are told that there will be freedom of conscience for doctors. But my concern is also all the healthcare workers, all the social workers who are involved in the care of the people who are terminally ill. According to the BBC, the passage of the end-of-life bill marks a colossal social change in the country. Yet more than 7 out of 10 Britons support the assisted suicide proposals, referred to by supporters as assisted dying. This is everywhere, isn't it, Don?
Yes, there are several European countries. Canada, it's now one of the major causes of death in Canada. And as you said, 11 states in the U.S. And New York General Assembly just passed a similar bill, and it's sitting on the governor's desk now. So those listeners who are in New York, you need to let your governor know, don't sign this bill.
So we're finding this everywhere. The pressure is great. It's a strange kind of pressure. Where does the pressure come from?
Well, Chuck, there is a national organization called Compassion and Choices that's very well organized, advocates for this. And before we go on, maybe we ought to make sure your listeners understand exactly what physician-assisted suicide is.
All right.
It's a process by which allows physicians to write a prescription for medications that then are given to the patient that they would take to cause their death.
All right.
So it's the issue here is the intent to end the patient's life.
All right. This is different than the euthanasia.
Euthanasia is when the medications are administered by the physician.
Mm-hmm.
Physician-assisted suicide is done by the patient taking the medications on their own. Though most of these now that are signed off on in Canada, for example, most of them are euthanasia because the patients either fail or having difficulty. The proponents would suggest that this is an easy process, but it's not so easy. It's a cocktail of multiple drugs that have to be swallowed, and for some patients, they can't swallow, they vomit, there may be burning, nausea, and they just can't get the cocktail down.
So it's the same kind of thing that we hear talked about, for instance, when a man is being executed, not through the electric chair, but through one of these cocktails, and it doesn't go according to prescription, and so it's not as easy as people might think.
Correct. Correct.
All right.
That's right.
Okay, so physician-assisted suicide, you know, if in other areas of law, if you have a person that's assisting part of a process to kill somebody, they become guilty before the law because of their complicitness in the process. So this procedure, these legislative documents that are coming out are for the purpose of legitimizing that which otherwise would cause a doctor to have criminal liability. Isn't that true?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes, it legalizes the process. It removes the legal barriers. It no longer would be called medical malpractice. It would be called patient's choice.
Euphemisms. Now, yes, Shakespeare once said, a rose by any other name would smell as sweet. So just because we change the language or the words doesn't mean we change the fact, is it?
That's right. Once the customary protections against malpractice is removed, Chuck, as assisted suicide becomes legal, physicians, family members, and caregivers will then feel compelled to offer assisted suicide. Think about it. If this becomes legal, well, check it out in other states. My guess is what's happened in other states and what may happen in Virginia is that every physician, every hospital, every long-term care center will then be required to offer this as an option for their patients.
So then it becomes mandated, in effect, it's mandated then under color of law, and by then it becomes so deeply rooted in the expectations within the medical profession and of people that it comes very close to a mandate, doesn't it?
Well, I'd be careful about using the term mandate. You know, they are careful about writing the language in these laws so that physicians aren't required to participate. There's backdoor options so that they can refer their patient to another physician.
Well, it didn't work that way with COVID. Why do we think it should work any differently here?
I use the term coercion.
There you go. That's just another word for mandate. Pressure.
Patients will feel coerced. Family members will feel coerced, and this will be very subtle. Mm-hmm. Don't you know how people will go, oh, well, this is just to relieve pain and suffering. Mm-hmm. Well, who's pain and suffering, Chuck? The patients or the physicians or the family members?
Well, oftentimes it's the family member because they don't want to see their family member go through pain and suffering, and so they wince at it, and they say, oh, we just have to get rid of this. It's causing me too much problem. The problem isn't necessarily with the person who's suffering, it's with the person who is pretending they're compassionate about the one who is suffering, and so the motivation is actually driven selfishly.
Sure. Chuck, I've sat with many friends and family over months through their terminal illnesses and even as they've passed away. I've seen their suffering, I've felt their suffering, I've participated in their suffering. But as a physician and family member, I would not participate in the process of taking their lives. Mm. I've got six scriptural reasons why this would not be reasonable according to Scripture.
Okay.
And for your Christian listeners, and for others, you know, I've got nine practical. Worldly reasons why I'm opposed to physician-assisted suicide.
All right. Well, let's hit the six Christian ones first.
Okay. I'm just going to run through them real quick.
Good.
If you want to expand on them anymore, then go right ahead. Number one, sanctity of life. That, you know, we are created by God, and God determines whether we live or die.
Mm-hmm.
Sovereignty of God over life and death. Three, the human body being the temple of the Holy Spirit. We're not our own.
Right.
We were bought with a price.
Right.
Therefore, we're supposed to glorify God with our body. And for your Christian listeners, they'll understand this next one, the value of suffering. The world doesn't appreciate that, but I think we as Christians understand that God provides this for some purpose that leads to spiritual growth. You know, we can look at Job's life, on and on.
Right.
I'm opposed to it because there is hope and purpose that the Bible is consistently offers hope in God. And lastly, for the sake of righteousness, it's the right thing to do.
Mm.
We're repeatedly called upon by God to be righteous and do the right thing.
Well, if we don't celebrate life and if we don't value life, what's happening is that we actually are playing God. It's God who gave us life and gave us liberty at the same time. And so if we think that we have the right and freedom to to remove life and liberty, we are actually becoming surrogate gods, aren't we?
That's right. Yeah.
That's a dangerous thing.
Yeah. Well, what can I say? Yeah, when God is removed from being the standard or guide, and His Holy Scripture, then we can do whatever we want to do, right?
Yeah. Just a week ago, a member of parliament there over there in the UK, a Christian member of parliament, stood before, well, he stood in an open chamber. There was only one other person there, and that is the one who was filming what he had to say. And he spoke to the nation, and he spoke to the parliament. And in summary, he said, look, here's what we have done. And he referred to the act that they just passed about physician-assisted suicide. He referred to the issue with regard to abortion. He referred to a number of specific issues. And he said, can you believe that we in England that have the history of the Christian faith rooted here, that we spread all over the world, can you believe that we have taken these actions in our government in these very quarters that were once deemed sacred? Look what we have done. We have abandoned the God who made and preserved us a nation. Right. What are we going to do about it? We're at the end of the road, he said. This was almost a 10-minute address to the entire nation. I played it right here on this program the day after it was given. Very, very powerful. Where are the people that are giving this kind of address to in the halls of power today in America?
Chuck, I'm finding that a lot of people don't know about this, that it's being done in somewhat of a quiet fashion in many of our legislatures. You know, this is the fifth year that the Virginia General Assembly has tried to pass the bill. But I think they understood this past year that the governor just wasn't going to sign it. So they tabled it. They put it off to the side.
Uh-huh.
It's going to come back this year. And if the more progressive, liberal-minded folks get into the administration,
right,
our concern is that this will become law.
Now, Virginia used to be, when we first came here 30 years ago, it was a red state. George Allen was the governor. There were Christians that inhabited his leadership within the state, his offices and so on. I actually spoke there and actually went into the chambers with the governor and his staff, and we had a prayer meeting right there, holding hands in his very office.
Well,
it's not that way now. What's that?
I was a state health commissioner for a year and a half.
Is that right? Yes. Well, you know, we're in a position now where that could never happen in this country or in Virginia. Very unlikely, even though Governor Youngkin professes to be a Christian, the spirit within our government in Virginia is so blue. We're no longer red. We're no longer purple. We're a blue state for all practical purposes, aren't we?
Yes, sir.
So how do we purport to win this battle to protect life?
Well, I'm a member of a group of advocates who oppose this this legislation.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Alliance Against Assisted Suicide.
Right.
You can find more about this group by going to nosuicideva.org. That's nosuicideva.org. I'm sure similar organizations are exist otherwise. There are national organizations. I can tell you that the Catholic Church is very much opposed, and your local Catholic diocese is, I'm sure, active in whichever state this is being considered. So our group is trying to speak to General Assembly members to help them understand somewhat what they think is the new, get beyond, oh, it's just the patients making their choice.
Uh-huh.
No, it's medical malpractice. It's not choice right now. And you want to change that to legalize this process? So we're talking to General Assembly members. We're also trying to mobilize our medical community, because frankly, right now, the Medical Society of Virginia has a neutral position to this. They're not opposed to it because they've got members who are for it, members
and
who are against it.
All right, we'll be right back to talk about that when we get back for this break, friends. Stay tuned. Don Stern, our guest.
There is so much more about Chuck Crismeyer and Save America Ministries on our website, saveus.org. For example, under the marriage section, God has marriage on his mind. Chuck has some great resources to strengthen your marriage. First off, a fact sheet on the state of the marital union, a fact sheet on the state of ministry, marriage, and morals. saveus.org. Marriage, divorce, and remarriage. What does the Bible really teach about this? Find all of this at saveus.org. Also, a letter to pastors, the Hosea Project, saveus.org, and many more resources to strengthen your marriage. It's all on Chuck's website, saveus.org. Again, you can listen to Chuck's Viewpoint broadcast live and archived. Save America Ministries website at saveus.org.
Our special guest today on Viewpoint, Dr. Don Stern, he is working with the Virginia Alliance Against Assisted Suicide. I have in my hands their statement, their mission statement, and so on, and it's made up of a variety of different organizations and agencies and doctors and so on that are opposing in all of its forms the legalization of assisted suicide in the Commonwealth of Virginia. Now, the whole issue has been choice. My body, my choice. We heard that was the cry for abortion. My body, my choice. Well, does everybody then have a choice to kill themselves? Is that a right? And is that a responsibility? You see, you move from something being a right to being a responsibility. And that's where one of the problems is, because government wants people dead. I hate to put it so bluntly. Government wants people dead. And the reason they want people dead is because they believe that it is the seniors and also those who are suffering various kinds of diseases and so on that are putting an undue weight on medical care and therefore expense. And therefore, government, while not coming out and declaring this, they really want people dead. They do. And so there's a motivation behind this. You can call it an open motivation. You can call it an ulterior motive. Whatever you want to call it, it's real. And if we move forward with this doctor-assisted suicide, physician-assisted suicide, the next step is euthanasia, doctor-led killing of people that they think really shouldn't be a weight on the medical system anymore. So then it becomes not a matter of sympathy, not a matter of compassion, but a matter of, dare we say, a kind of monetary coercion. This is pretty dangerous. It seems to me this is exceedingly dangerous, Don.
Yes, sir. You mentioned the government, but what about insurance providers? What do you think the life insurance providers will think about this, and the medical insurance providers will think about this?
Well, yeah, absolutely, because it's all about money.
Does it not provide kind of a perverse incentive for them? In fact, this is having some impact in America already. I heard of one case in which a patient was denied their cancer treatment care, but the insurance company was willing to pay for their physician-assisted suicide medications.
Isn't that interesting?
And I also think it's kind of interesting in this bill in Virginia, and I'm sure it's written in all the bills across the country, that committing suicide in this manner does not negate your life insurance policy. You know,
interesting.
All life insurance policy, if you commit suicide, you forfeit your life insurance.
Exactly.
But that's specifically written in this bill to protect, to prevent that from happening.
In other words, it's all about money again.
It is.
It's all about money. So money supersedes the very people that are made in the image of God.
Yeah, well, none of us want to see people suffer.
No, of course not.
So we want it, you know, we don't want it for ourselves. We don't want to see it in our family members. We don't want to see it in others. And we're called by God to take on their suffering with them, to suffer with them, not to kill them.
Right. You know, Don, we had a situation in our congregation. Just let me share this briefly. A man who came to us in our congregation when we were very, 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 very small, about 30 years ago. He was not an educated guy. He was a very simple person, but he loved the Lord intensely. And over the years, he went through all kinds of suffering. I mean, really, his wife divorced him, didn't want the kids, so he had to live in a car with them for a while, and then in somebody else's home, and so on and so on. Those are kinds of suffering. Then he ended up in a situation where his own daughter took her life. Not because she was living in the home, other circumstances, even though she purported to love the Lord with all her heart, soul, mind, and strength. Then, several years ago, he began to experience diabetes. And over a period of time, we watched this take place in his life, in our congregation. Eventually, he had to go in for dialysis. He had to go in, I think it was 3 times a week for dialysis in order to stay alive. And then he would come into our congregation. His entire digestive system was completely wiped out. And he had all kinds of problems. I mean, embarrassing problems. But he wanted to be with the saints. He wanted to be in the congregation. And he would go to great lengths to be with us. Yes, there were things that went on that were not what we would have desired. And we saw his suffering, but we also saw that through it all, God was working in his life and, quite frankly, working in our congregation's life as a result of how he was dealing with his suffering. Ultimately, he passed about 4 months ago. Nobody helped him to commit suicide. That would have been the last thing in the world on his mind. He felt, he believed that what he was doing was enduring, was living out the life of Christ, even amid suffering. And it had such an impact on our congregation that we showed up, our congregation showed up at his memorial service, testifying to the tremendous impact that this man had on our lives through suffering.
Yeah. That's what I meant by there's something special about suffering. For the Christian, we know that God allows for this, that this may lead to a perseverance and perseverance hope, and our hope is in Jesus Christ.
Right. The whole idea of perseverance, though, doesn't compute anymore in American churchianity, does it? I mean, everything's supposed to be wonderful. Everything's supposed to be cool. We're actually bringing people into the body of Christ that haven't even confessed their sin. I mean, it's an amazing situation that's going on. So there's no place for suffering. There's place for prosperity, but not for suffering.
Well, Chuck, you raised the question earlier, why is this going on in America?
Yeah.
I have another hypothesis.
Okay.
I'd like to bounce off of you. You know, 100 years ago, we had a culture in which people took care of their elderly.
Mm-hmm.
But is that true in America today? The long-term care system is this growing industry. Assisted living, continuous
right.
care communities, nursing home care. You don't see this like anywhere else in the world.
No. We have a neighbor who is from Afghanistan, and she was telling us just the other day she has four generations in her home right now.
Yeah. So, you know, we go from warehousing our elderly to taking their lives.
Mm.
It is a worrisome cultural shift, which I think we need to give some serious consideration to.
Absolutely. Now, I have in my... Go ahead.
You've heard this term, I'm sure you have heard this. I don't want to be a burden to my children.
Uh-huh. Right.
You go to any long-term care center and talk to the folks, well, I don't want to be a burden to my children. I think that's a shift in our culture where we think we're beginning to believe that that is true. That
well, that's also driving the cremation business.
How's that?
Exactly the same argument. People, parents, grandparents, elderly say, I don't want to be a financial burden to my kids, so
financial,
cremate
right.
me.
Right, yeah, it's less expensive.
It's
right.
less expensive. So money right. is the issue again.
With families, that may very well be true. I was thinking about more the existential pain and suffering that family members may have with a person who has a chronic illness, a person with disability. You know, these are the folks that are most disenfranchised in America, other than the unborn baby. And we think we can just dehumanize them a little bit, which allows us to take their lives.
Dehumanize. Well, that goes right along with AI, goes right along with the spirit of replacing humans with machines. It's all part of a bigger picture, isn't it?
You can see this as a major spiritual battle.
Yes.
And I think Satan just loves this kind of stuff. When people turn their backs on the Lord, he's got an avenue, an entry point.
Yeah. All right. Now, so you have, through the Virginia Alliance Against Assisted Suicide, you have given people an opportunity to kind of join with you, at least in Virginia, with regard to this. How do they do that?
Yeah, they can go to the website, nosuicideva.org. One word, nosuicideva.org. Click on the menu, go to About Us. You find the mission and value statement, and at the bottom of the mission and value statement is an opportunity to sign up as a member. It doesn't require you to do anything.
All right.
It would be nice if we could go to our General Assembly this next year and say, we have 100,000 folks who've signed up as members of our organization who are opposed to this bill and believe you should not sign this bill. We'd like to be able to do that.
All right. Well, I have a copy of it right here before me, and you say you can find it right there on your website.
Correct.
NoSuicideVA.org. NoSuicideVA.org. We'll be right back with Dr. Don Stern in just a moment.
Have you ever considered what the early church was like? Many people are developing a heart longing for greater fulfillment in our practices as Christians. A recent study showed 53,000 people a week are leaving the back door of America's churches in frustration. What is going on? Why has there not been even a 1% gain among followers of Christ in the last 25 years? Could it be that God is seeking to restore first century Christianity for the 21st century?
Jesus said, I'll build my church. Is Christ by His Spirit stirring to prepare the church for the 21st century? The early church prayed together and broke bread from house to house. They were family, and it was said by all who observed, behold how they love one another. Incredible.
But the same can be found right now. Go to saveus.org and click Sell Church. We can revive first century Christianity for the 21st century.
It's about people, not programs. It's about a body, not a building.
That's saveus.org. Click Sell Church.
Death with dignity. Should doctors assist suicide? That really is the issue before us. Is it really death with dignity? Or are there other ulterior motives and motivations behind it that take away all the dignity that we like to talk about? Our special guest today, Dr. Don Stern, in Virginia here. He originally was years ago part of the Governor George Allen's governorship, and he's been involved in the greater Commonwealth of Virginia programs and so on, particularly with regard to fatherhood. How's that going, Don?
Well, we had the first governor-sanctioned statewide fatherhood campaign in the country in the mid-90s.
Yep.
And it's grown from that. I continue to be impressed to read about and see even the federal government has in some of their various departments this promotion of fathers. I think they've finally looked at the data and realized that when mothers and fathers work cooperatively together to raise their children, guess what? Those kids do better.
Right.
Better educationally, better financially, better in their marriage.
In other words, they thrive.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, you and I were working together in that regard a number of years ago. I had a passion for that. I think you knew I wrote a book called Hearts of the Fathers, Leaving a Legacy, How to Leave a Legacy That Lasts. And this is something on God's mind. It's on His heart. The next to last message that He gives to the world is through the, He said, I will raise up the spirit of Elijah the prophet to call the hearts of the fathers to the children, the hearts of the children to the fathers, lest I strike the earth with a curse. And even secular leaders are saying the number one social issue of our time is fatherlessness. Every other problem is derivative from that. Maybe even also some of this assisted suicide. We'll see where that goes. So, Forbes magazine had a special article that came out. He said, physician-assisted suicide is a bigger problem than we realize. Dave Eisner was born with a rare genetic condition called nemaline myopathy, required a wheelchair, had a host of other health problems. Last year, he stopped at one point breathing, passed out on the street, was taken to the emergency room. He said, I was alive thanks to the determination of law enforcers and local medical personnel to keep me alive. So he wrote in an article warning a law being considered in his home state of New York that you referred to earlier, Don, threatens to undo this presumption of favor of life-saving that motivated the first responders to keep him alive. The bill called the Medical Aid in Dying Act would allow mentally competent adults with 6 months or less to live to obtain a prescription that would put them to sleep and peacefully end their lives. And New York is not alone. 17 states, including Florida, Massachusetts, and Pennsylvania, are considering so-called death with dignity laws. 11 states already have them on the books, and advocates say these laws spare the terminally ill from unnecessary suffering. But a closer look at Europe and Canada, where physician-assisted suicide has been legal and common for years, paints a much darker picture, he says. Often used by government-run healthcare systems to nudge sick patients toward ending their lives. So the United States may not have a completely socialized system of medicine yet, but the government covers nearly half of all healthcare expenditures, and over the past 40 years, its share of the nation's health bill has been growing slowly but surely, and at some point it may have a financial incentive, already does, by the way, in hastening people toward their demise. Now, this is an interesting article coming from Forbes magazine, a business magazine. But apparently they considered this to be a serious issue. And you do too, don't you, Don?
Yes, sir. And so does the American Medical Association. The AMA has resolved that physician-assisted suicide is incompatible with the role of physicians as healers. At least our national organization, the AMA, who I don't always agree with, but in this case I agree, they've got it right, that this is incompatible with the role of a healer, the physician as a healer. I mentioned the U.S. Supreme Court earlier, who found that there is no right to in the Constitution to commit suicide.
All right, well, I'm looking at the AMA ethics guidelines right now. A professional perspective, physician-assisted suicide and euthanasia were explicitly prescribed or prevented in the Hippocratic Oath going back 2,500 years ago. While there have doubtless been individual physicians and dentists over the centuries who have occasionally helped their patients to die, this activity was clearly remained outside the boundaries of acceptable medical treatment. There's a professional concern that acceptance of physician involvement in either direct or indirect induced death would seriously undermine the trust that is necessary component of the physician-patient relationship. And if euthanasia becomes accepted, a physician might be tempted to end a patient's life without a request, either out of compassion or out of self-interest. This is right in the AMA Code of Medical Ethics.
Right.
Very interesting. We're talking about something that doesn't have an end in sight. Once you allow the door to be open for doctors to assist in killing a person by providing medication intentionally to do so, leads inevitably, I think, over a period of years to euthanasia. In other words, the doctor's direct causing of the death for whatever reason he deems, shall we say, compassionate or appropriate, whether it's financial purposes, whether he doesn't want to deal with the patient anymore, whether the family wants to get rid of him, whatever the motivation, or whether the insurance company doesn't want to pay. Euthanasia.
Right. Most of these bills in the United States, Chuck, include a provision that the patient must be determined to be terminally ill within 6 months. Tell me what doctor really knows when their patient is going to die. You look up the statistics on cancer. I mentioned my wife earlier. Well, she's blown the statistics away already.
Right. I have a friend who's been diagnosed with several kinds of cancer, including the worst cancers, and his wife tells me he has just been declared cancer-free.
Isn't that wonderful?
So these doctors cannot say things like that.
Right, right. They can make a reasonable, educated judgment, but there's anecdotes all over the place regarding folks who survive longer than that.
Yeah.
So these kinds of laws, physician-assisted suicide, is at great risk for abuse and coercion of our most vulnerable populations. It leads to a slippery slope, not just to those who are terminally ill, but to those who are so distraught, who have such existential pain and suffering, that they ask their doctor, "I want to die. I want to die." And so, in Canada, there's a young lady in her 30s who had chronic depression, and she was given a prescription for a physician-assisted suicide. So this corrupts the profession of medicine. As you noted earlier in the AMA statement, it distorts the doctor-patient relationship. It goes against a centuries-old medical ethics.
Mm-hmm.
It provides perverse incentives, as we mentioned earlier, for insurance companies and healthcare institutions. It violates the equity before the law. Think about it. Those who are disabled may be at really increased risk with these kinds of laws. And in America, well, anywhere in the world, it creates a culture where death is seen as the solution.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking right now at an article that just came out from Don Fetter. He is a columnist, lawyer, and he writes, assisted suicide could lead to forced euthanasia. This just came out a couple of days ago.
Yes.
And, of course, he's talking about New York becoming the 12th state to legalize assisted suicide if Governor Hochul signs the bill that passed the legislature in June. He says, except for Montana, the states that have embraced death with dignity are all deep blue. In other words, extremely liberal states who supported abortion. In other words, life isn't all that meaningful to them. And it's because those states are basically no longer God-fearing states. The people in those states, for the most part, are not God-fearing people. So now they're becoming gods in their own right and taking life in their own hands. So Don Fetter says opponents of assisted suicide include disability activists. They feel vulnerable. Perhaps they sense that voluntary could become compulsory. The real danger in assisted suicide, which could easily morph into euthanasia, lies in declining fertility and the graying of society. So he goes on and gives an interesting discussion of how our country, in fact, every country in the world, is graying. What he means by that is that the elderly are taking up a larger percentage of the population and have not been balanced out by the young people that have been killed through abortion. And so there's a complete distortion of the balance of life in all the Western countries, every one of them, including Russia, China. That's not a Western country, but in all the Western countries for sure. And now we've set up ourselves with a pressurized system to somehow justify getting rid of the elderly as quickly as possible. Euthanasia. What do you say in response to that?
Well, I agree that that could be the ultimate end here. Remember the movie Soylent Green? It's reasonable for us as people of faith and just as citizens of our country that we protect the vulnerable. If you get online and just type in and Google suicide, you'll get 100 sites that are all about suicide prevention. We've been talking in this country about suicide prevention.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lengthy document released
right.
by the feds recently on suicide prevention. And yet we have a General Assembly in Virginia that thinks it's okay to promote suicide. It's just disgusting.
It's a non sequitur. It just doesn't make sense, does it?
No.
Unless there be ulterior motives. Unless,
well,
then it makes sense.
You know, Satan doesn't always expose his reasons. You know, he works in very subtle ways.
Yeah.
And, you know, here, this is the compassionate thing to do. Death with dignity. Tell me, Chuck, what is dignifying about committing suicide?
Really? When a dear friend, when the daughter of my dear friend jumped off an 800-foot bridge in the name of Christ, where was the dignification?
Yeah. It's sad. It's not
very
dignifying.
Sad.
It's sad.
Very
yeah.
sad.
So we need to preserve the integrity of the medical profession.
All right.
And we need to promote alternatives like palliative care as the solution to end of life suffering, not suicide.
All right. So we're talking about death with dignity, and it's not dignity when you're assisting suicide or committing euthanasia. Should doctors assist suicide? The answer that our guest today, Dr. Don Stern, says, and which I agree with, no. It's contrary to everything that the medical profession supposedly stands for. And it's eroding. It will erode trust. So you might want to go, as particularly if you're in Virginia, go to nosuicideva.org. nosuicideva.org. Read what they have there. Sign up there, become a member, so that you can show that you are in support of protecting life. Do it today. Don't wait. nosuicideva.org. Don, thank you so much for joining us here on Viewpoint, friends. Today is the first day of the beginning of your life, my friends. Today, that's about life.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Chrismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you.